Welcome to the first episode of Pints of Football. We are your hosts, Ayushya and Himanshu. Two average guys who have a toxic relationship with football, the beautiful game. We can't live with it and we can't live without it. And we thought, why should we keep all the noise in our heads and amongst ourselves? So we decided to make it available to everyone for free.
Every week we discuss the most relevant topics in football. Well, relevant to us at least. And hopefully leave you with nuanced opinions, above average takeaways and some memorable banter.
Today's episode is about the second biggest club in Manchester over the last decade. The club with the second highest revenue in Manchester over the last decade. The club with the second best stadium in Manchester over the last decade. And the club with the second bald manager in Manchester over the last decade. On today's episode, we want to discuss, is this really a resurgence of Manchester United? Or is everything we have seen so far, and as highlighted by the drubbing at Liverpool, 7-0 at Anfield, is all of this just a mirage, just a false illusion, just a false dawn? And before we break down into today's topic in greater detail, we have to discuss the events at this weekend. And to put Himanshu out of his misery, who is a Manchester United fan, we'll try to keep it really short before we start talking about the club in general. Okay, let's dive straight into the Liverpool game. Himanshu, what went wrong?
It is another! It's 7 for Liverpool! Sensational! Astonishing! Incredible! The greatest win against Manchester United there's ever been has been served up!
I think the first half was pretty much what we expect from a lot of the halves that we have played as United, right? We concede in the first half, we come back in the second half. The great United comeback, as they call it. And that's what I hoped would happen. But the second half, I don't think we expected that much of a downfall by conceding 6 goals. All of them from, in my opinion, individual errors and playing the occasion than playing the match.
You're right. I mean, first half, United had 2 chances, one-on-one with Alisson. They missed both of them. They conceded a goal. I don't think Varane expected Gakpo to take that kind of a shot. Okay, going to the first half, 1-0. But you can see 6 goals in the next 45 minutes. 6 goals, even after 3-0, when you should have just blocked, just sat back and ensured the night doesn't get tougher, you still go on to concede 4 more. What was this? Was it a mental breakdown of the players or was it some systemic deficiency?
I think, yeah, at 2-0, 3-0, at 3-0 down, to be honest, right? That's when I thought this match is done. This match is pretty much done for. And what United should have done is kind of work towards like salvaging something from the game, maybe a consolation goal or two, and then having carrying that momentum and then correcting themselves for the next match. But what happened was United still believed, hey, it's 3-0, we've been winning forever, right? We can still win this game. And that's where they were at fault. At 70 minutes, when you're 3-0 down at Anfield, there's very little chance of coming back, right? And I could still see random things like, you know, Fernandes going at the referee. I think there were a couple of fights which I think Luke Shaw and their fullbacks were having, right? Unnecessary. It just really took the focus away from the game. We were missing tackles. We were missing second balls. And there were a lot of these goal mouth scrambles which were leading to goals. It was really terrible. So again, I put that down to United not yet having the mentality to kind of shut this game down, understand that this is it, this is a defeat, we move on to the next game and then we make our season from there onwards.
You keep saying that it was a lot of individual errors, so let's just quickly go through the goals, right?
And right.
I'm just going to say first goal, and I want your opinion. Was it an individual error or was it some brilliance on the side of Liverpool? First goal,
Fred individual Gakpo. Error. I would say Fred individual error, which was arising from Dalot being out of place. Next.
Okay. You were really keen to get past the next 6 goals, aren't you? The second goal, Nunes.
I think Nunes was a very poor clearance from Luke Shaw. I think he had a couple of opportunities to just put it for a throw-in. He instead chose to shoot it down the middle of the park, which then kind of, I think, rebounded off one of our own players. So that was terrible. The individual error, Luke Shaw.
I think Mourinho was always right about Shaw's limited capabilities. The third goal, the Gakpo goal, where Salah made a fool out of Martinez.
I think Salah was honestly just too good for the World Cup winner Martinez. So put a little respect on that name. But yeah, he was at that moment, he got the better of him, I would say. And Gakpo, excellent finish. So not individual error.
Goal of the night, right?
Yep, very much so.
The fourth goal, the Salah goal, Salah's first goal.
Salah's first goal was honestly just a deflection off, I think. Was it McTominay? And then just landed it at a very good situation. And Salah being Salah has a good shot. So I would say lucky.
Shout out to Mo Salah for breaking Robbie Fowler's record. Nunes' second goal.
Nunes' second goal was a brilliant cross from Henderson, who's played absolutely nothing this season. So honestly, we're bringing out the best in Liverpool's players with such performances. But yeah, not individual error. I would say it's like a very good play from Henderson to pick out Darwin, and Darwin with an amazing header.
And I think last two goals, I think we can both agree they were individual errors. Salah's second goal and the goal scored by Firmino.
Very. I think at near post, De Gea has beaten at his near post plenty of times, and that was one of the occasions. And I think for Salah's goal, I think, yeah, I don't quite remember, but again, it was a goalmouth scramble. So yeah, I would say individual errors. And things. I mean, these balls could have been cleared long before they made it into the penalty box. It didn't. I would not blame the defense. I also blame the midfield to be in a position that the ball is in, you know, such a state of play.
And I think any time when you're playing with Anthony in your team, you're just playing with 10 men. So
yeah, he has an agenda against Anthony. He's probably going to come up in for future podcasts. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, I think Anthony will be spinning on the field even when our second episode comes around.
Oh, God. Hope not. Yeah.
Okay, but I'll put you out of your misery, right?
Let's move on.
Moving past this Liverpool game and looking at Manchester United's season as a whole. Terrible start of the season. All the Ronaldo problems. The 4-0 defeat. The defeat at the Manchester Derby. Things start to get better. You are in a very commanding position in the race for top four. You won the Carabao Cup. I know now the Liverpool game has maybe given you a reality check. I don't know. I mean, after last season and the problems at the start of the season, nobody would have guessed or predicted that Manchester United will be in the position where they are now, third in the league, having already won a trophy, having knocked out Barcelona of the Europa League. So my question to you is, what is the feeling now for you as a Manchester United fan? Taking in what happened over the weekend still, how do you feel about the club right now?
I think I'm super optimistic about the way the season will end, right? This Liverpool 7-0 win is not going to... 7-0 loss, I would rather say. It's not going to change my opinion about this season. This season has been terrific just for the fact how badly we ended last season, right? I think I would have been very happy if we had just Champions League qualification at the end of this one. We already have a trophy, and then Champions League qualification seems likely to happen. So if those two happen, I'll still be very happy with this season. We'd had two such setbacks before this, right? The Brentford 4-0 loss as well as the 6-3 loss to Man City. And we still kind of bounced back from that to a very good, you know, effect. And this is the reason I feel this is just honestly a reality check. It'll keep the players grounded and we will get back to good momentum with the next Real Betis game which is coming up. So this is not going to change my expectations from the season. It's just a blip.
You bring up this interesting point, right? That at the beginning of the season, all you would have been happy was with the top four, right? That would have been enough. You've now won the Carabao Cup, so that's always a plus. You won the Mickey Mouse Cup, but still, that's a plus.
It's a Mickey Mouse Club for whoever doesn't win it, but yeah.
I'm not even going to dignify that as a response. But now that you have won a trophy, given what happened at Liverpool, what are your expectations from the remainder of this season? I know you have set top four, but how much does the Europa League matter to you? From this point onwards, if you don't finish third and you finish fourth, basically you slip down a position or you miss out on the Europa League, would you consider it a disappointment considering the pace at which the club was progressing, especially over the past 2 months?
I think, to be honest, in any business, right, you kind of reset expectations as you go through the calendar year. I think it's pretty much same for United. Start of the year, our expectations was qualification and one trophy would be exceeding expectations, to be honest. I think he's already reached that point. And I don't think third to fourth place would make much of a difference to me or to any United fan. These kind of defeats do hurt once in a while. This is Liverpool 7-0 defeat. But this would not hamper my expectation of the season, which is still just the one trophy which we already have along with the Champions League qualification. Anything beyond that would be cherry on the cake.
So basically you're saying that if United were to end the season where they are right now, third and with the Europa League, you'd consider this
the
a
Mickey
successful
Mouse
season.
Cup, not the
Mickey
Europa
Mouse Cup. Sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. You would be happy.
I would be really happy with this. We carry on this momentum to next season, hopefully with the owners supporting us.
Okay. Moving on from your expectation of the club. So, see, the reason, even though I'm a Chelsea fan, right, I'm not so worried about this so-called resurgence of Manchester United as Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola and every other United fan is putting it as, is because I feel we've been here before with United, right? Ever since Alex Ferguson went away, you've finished second twice in the league. And quite frankly, to me, the football has not necessarily been threatening. And you haven't really followed it up next season. And to me, under Ten Hag, Manchester United still does not seem very different. It still seems to be this club which is just playing basic counter-attacking football. He came in, he tried to do his Ajax thing, he tried to be City and Barcelona and tried to press from the back and pass out from the back and then press teams, and he realized very quickly all of this is not going to work, and he has gone back to basic counter-attacking football, having Marcus Rashford score goals right up front. I really don't see a difference. So help me understand, what is the Ten Hag way?
I think what Ole used to do a lot was absorb the pressure, then hope that, you know, Bruno would ping in these passes behind the defense for a Rashford or a Martial to run onto, right? I don't see Ten Hag being as simplistic as that, right? In the defense, what he has is inverted fullbacks, right? If, let's say, the attack is happening from the left-hand side, Dalot tucks in the middle and kind of creates that overload in midfield. That's very different from what Ole used to do, right? Ole used to just have that typical 4-3-3, where the wing-backs are responsible for actually, you know, like overlapping with the wingers. That's very traditional, and that's not what Ten Hag has. Ten Hag plays it very different in terms of positioning these defenders. In terms of the attack, right, pressing up from the front, Ole had a very... There was no method to the madness up front, right? They used to just press, and there were very arbitrary triggers to when the press used to happen. But it's very well defined match to match with Ten Hag. He either presses with one of the weaker links in midfield of the opposition team getting the ball, or right up front, you know, right from the first, the goalkeeper having the ball, if the goalkeeper is not much of a ball playing goalkeeper in the opposition side. So it's very well defined, and it's defined opponent to opponent. So Ten Hag is very smart about how he goes about these very specific, you know, formations or attack, the ways of play, I would say, in the United way, just the way United play. That would be in on the field stuff, right? If you look at off the field, right, Ole had this very much like, you know, just bring a smile on people's faces kind of a theory, which worked out well for a while and then kind of just dipped, not sustainable. I think when Mourinho had the pragmatic approach of play, and then he used to kind of distance himself from the weaker players, like Luke Shaw doesn't play well, used to call him fatty or what else, I don't know, some kind of, you know, terms that he had for him, very, very indicated his lack of fitness many number of times. Ten Hag doesn't do that. He takes it out on the players within the dressing room, and he defends them to the core in front of the press. So it brings a very, you know, united feeling within the club. And I think that kind of really matters much. Hence, I feel there is a stark difference between the way Ten Hag treats United to which a Mourinho and Ole kind of treated United. And the Ten Hag way, for me, is more sustainable. Hence, I feel this is two very different things.
Again, you keep... And so I'm listening to everything that you are saying, right? And I've seen how strategically you have only compared Ten Hag's Man United to Ole's Man United. And between you and me, we both can agree that Solskjaer was never going to be this title-winning manager who'll take you back, right?
For sure. He was just a stopgap until we got someone better, yeah.
And so let's keep Ole out of the equation, right? Even though you finish second under him, nobody really believed that you're going to amount to anything. And the next season under him, you did capitulate, right? Let's just compare him to Mourinho, because all of what you're telling me right now is still not answering the question of where is the tactician in Erik ten Hag. All I'm hearing is man management. He talks nicely to the players. You know, he got rid of Ronaldo. He gets the players early in the morning when they lose. He clamps down, brings in discipline in the club. All of this is man management, right? But I also feel all of this is just pure sanity check, right? This was a club in disarray where there were leaks to the media. Players were not turning up on time. Players were not playing as a unit. So I think he's just taken care of all these sanitary measures, or I say hygiene measures. And I think when you take care of that hygiene, a club with Manchester United's spending power and Man United's size should ideally be third or fourth in the league. And I think he's gotten there, and that's why I think this is his ceiling. Where is the tactician under Erik ten Hag?
I would say even in these matches where we are in trouble, right? What I say is when Mourinho used to just bring on like maybe a Sanchez or a Lukaku or, you know, a Zlatan to kind of just change, like hopefully change the way they play only through the individual effort of the player. Ten Hag doesn't know that. I see a lot of changes. I'm like, hey, what's happening here? Why is he bringing on a midfielder for a winger when we need a goal? And we actually get that goal, right? And it's very brilliant because he sees the way the opponent plays. He understands first half didn't work out. Let's put on a Fred for maybe a winger, right? Get more control in midfield, get an overload in midfield. And through this, he gets more possession. Then he is able to kind of put through a Rashford or an Anthony from the back of the defense and, you know, get them kind of rolling. Yeah, so I feel from these measures, right, I would say he is very smart in the way he kind of puts out teams and he changes things at halftime. He's not afraid to do it. Not that Mourinho was afraid to make changes at halftime, but his changes were sticking to the same pragmatic approach, the same formation, or just a different player hoping that this player is more motivated or more skilled to bring out that difference. While Ten Hag goes into the style of play, sees what he needs to bring in terms of a style of play, which is very smart. I think that kind of works more.
But let's just put things into perspective, right, of where Mourinho is United, right? The year they finished second, that was 2017 and 2018, right? After 24 games, or rather 25 games, where we are in the season right now, United were on 53 points under Mourinho. 53 points, and they had scored 43 goals. Under Ten Hag, they are on 49 points, and they have scored 41 goals. You are 4 points worse off than where you were under him, and you have roughly scored the same number of goals, right? So again, and I know you're talking about all this niceties he's brought into the club, and I know he's also... he's staying in Manchester, which you keep pointing out to me offline. He's not staying in a hotel and he's probably kissing a lot of babies and going to hospitals. But I don't think all of that really makes a difference, right? I mean, at the end of the day, football is a result-oriented sport. And under Mourinho, you were almost similar on goals. You were 4 points ahead. So why should we believe that things will be different this time around? That this is not just a one-season thing, that it's going to be a bit different next year.
So I think, yeah, when you say the second place finish for Mourinho, right, that was his second season. So he had 2 pre-seasons to build up to that season. So he had much more time to prepare. Then just look at man management, right? Pogba was his biggest buy. And look at the way he treated Pogba, like at the end of it, right? He just wanted an amount. It was basically him or Pogba, I think, at the end of it. And the Glazers chose Pogba. And I feel like it's very similar. Let's look at the way... Ten Hag is treating it, right? Sancho is not even his purchase. He has nothing to do with it. Certain managers who have these legacy players who are not working out for them, they just kind of sell them off in the transfer market, right? Ten Hag is not doing that. Ten Hag had a way to deal with Sancho, with whatever Sancho was going through, right? He sent him away for some time, got him back in the right mental state to play for the club, and he has 2 goals back for the club with 3-4 starts that he has had since his return. Mourinho would never do that. So there's a very sustainable way of playing. Ten Hag can bring out the best in players who are going through the worst of times. And Mourinho would kind of really distance him from such characters. So I feel Ten Hag can create that little bit of a difference going forward in next season as well.
I mean, I agree with you on this particular part, right? That you need to be able to take everybody forward. And I think at least that's the impression that Ten Hag is giving right now. But let's take this point between Ten Hag and Mourinho even further, right? Let's see who had the better team. I know you were alluding to the fact that Mourinho was banking on individuals. I think he was banking on individuals because he legitimately had a worse off team than what Ten Hag has, right? So let's just go, you know, forward, midfield and then defense, right? Let's just look at the forward line that Mourinho had. He had Martial, he had Lukaku, and he had a Rashford who was yet... Actually, both Martial and Rashford were just hitting puberty, actually. Where you look at what Ten Hag has, right? He has signed Messi's favorite Weghorst. He has Rashford. He has Sancho. And look, if Sancho is not playing well, it is Manchester United for fault because you brought a very well-seasoned player from Borussia Dortmund. Then he has his own hand-picked, almost 90 million euro, Anthony playing. I really think Mourinho didn't have as good of a front line as Ten Hag has.
Okay, if you're looking at the front line, right, let's just start with maybe a Lukaku, right? I think Lukaku came from Everton where he had a stellar season and he was in the Premier League for quite a long time. So Lukaku knew the league and he didn't perform to expectations and like performed well below expectations, I would say, for a £75 million signing. And in comparison to Lukaku, we had Weghorst, right? Weghorst, Apna, Bobo, the guy who came from on loan from Burnley, right? He was doing okay in the Turkish league and he came to us with honestly just the 2 goals off in the World Cup, where he kind of just shone in those 20 minutes that he played. He's a nothing player, right? He has no goals. It's just the work rate. He knows exactly what a Weghorst would offer. He gets that out of him. So Weghorst is a worse player than Lukaku, but Ten Hag can get better out of him. Even if Rashford, Martial had really good seasons before, you know, having Mourinho who was coaching them, right? Rashford has a stellar debut season in the Premier League. Martial did as well. In fact, Rashford started out worse in this season, right? He came from five goals in the previous season to something much better, scoring at like 22, 23 goals this season. So I would say Mourinho had honestly something better and he got very bad output out of them. Whereas Ten Hag had a little bit of legacy players, a little bit of some people he brought in who is getting the best out of. And he's not getting, let's say, even Anthony, right? It's not goals. It's sometimes his work rate. It's sometimes his tracking back. It's sometimes just this end passing which kind of releases a few players, right? Weghorst just pressing up front, not for goals, obviously. So these kind of things he's very intelligent to read. And that's never something Mourinho would have done. He would have screamed at how poor a management had to offer a Weghorst and how what Weghorst is, etc. Take digs at him and press at all these things. So I would still believe Ten Hag is getting better out of whatever little he has.
Okay, so I mean, I'm starting to see a theme when you're comparing Mourinho and Ten Hag, that Ten Hag just seems to get the better out of his players. He's working off, and you believe with the forward, the front line at least, Ten Hag is worse off. He started with something way worse than what Mourinho had.
Correct. I would agree with that. I mean, Ronaldo with his ego and everything is worse than any striker we had. And I have to FYI tell everyone, I hate Ronaldo. Like, I put United at above any player that we have had. I think Ronaldo was a big curse to the club.
I mean, I agree with you. I think for the sake of the club, Ronaldo had to leave.
Yeah.
And but I really wish somebody signed him because I just loved seeing one of the best players of all time in the league. And honestly, given Chelsea's state currently with the lack of goals, I really hope we would have signed him. Even with all his drama, 10 extra goals would have really helped us a lot. But we'll keep Chelsea for another day. Let's move to the midfield, right? Mourinho had Pogba, Mata, Lingard, Herrera, Mkhitaryan, Matic, and Young, who would sometimes play in midfield or would go ahead as a winger. On Ten Hag's side, the current Manchester United team, we have McTominay, we have Fred, we have the four-time Champions League winner, a serial winner in Casemiro. We have the self-proclaimed great in Bruno Fernandes. I think we have Sabitzer, right? Another inspired January signing, right? So who do you think had the better team to cope with?
I think if you compare midfield, right, you look at Matic, he was a seasoned English Premier League player. So he had the most experience coming into the United side. Pogba was having an amazing season at Juventus and he came in as his creative midfielder, right? So these two I would put as having higher expectations, not what they ended up doing in the subsequent seasons, right? Lingard as well was an up-and-coming young player as he's always been. But yeah, I see we're trying to get at. And if you look at even the purchases, right, Pogba was a purchase of Mourinho. Mkhitaryan was. Pogba, Matic and Mkhitaryan were purchases of Mourinho. Casemiro was the sole purchase of Ten Hag. Sabitzer, I wouldn't even bring into the conversation because he's only had a couple of starts, right? He's still understanding the United way. I would still say, based on that, right, he just has Casemiro. But Casemiro is everything for sure. And in terms of what control Ten Hag had in the club, he just got in one player and he's still getting so much out of a Bruno, who is a legacy player, so much out of a Fred. I mean, Fred was so, he was joked about, he's the most memed about midfielder we have, right? And he's been brilliant, especially in the Barca game. So I would say, again, the same thing, bringing the best out of whatever he has at his exposure.
Yeah. See, I think the midfield was the easier part. I totally agree, Mourinho had a much better midfield than what Ten Hag has to offer. But I think defense is where I think Mourinho really pulled a lot of rabbits out of the bag. Let's look at midfielders, right? Sorry, defenders. He had Lindelof, he had Bailey, he had Rojo, he had Smalling, and he had Valencia. And obviously, the eternally present Phil Jones. When we compare that to the current team, which Ten Hag has, right? He has England's starting left back in Luke Shaw, right? On the right side, he has Ronaldo's favorite and the inverted, wing back in Diego Dalot. He has Aaron Wan-Bissaka as backup. He has Rafael Varane, again, a serial winner, a World Cup winner. He has Lisandro Martinez, again, a World Cup winner, who, by the way, is outperforming given his height in the league. Like, he's really coping up very well with the physical aspect of it. And then on the bench, again, He has England's starting central defender in Harry Maguire.
Oh God, don't mention him. Huh?
He's the most expensive
defender in the league. You're not making a point by mentioning Maguire, by the way.
So, you look at what Ten Hag has to offer, right? He has straight away he has a way better defensive lineup than what Mourinho had. And the fantastic thing under Mourinho was that only his wingbacks played 20 plus games, right? Smalling played 28 games, Valencia played 31 games. But between Lindelof, Bailly and Rojo, nobody started more than 14 games in the season. In spite of that, Mourinho was able to achieve so much out of that defense, right? So, again, I really think Mourinho just did so much more with that Manchester United team.
I mean, I think defense would be less of an argument from my side that Mourinho had it worse. I would say he did have it worse. But then again, if you look at the purchases, right? Bailly was his purchase. Lindelof was his purchase. So, that is pretty much where it falls, right? We have a lot of legacy players currently under Ten Hag. The only player that he actually bought was Lisandro Martinez, who's of course performing way beyond expectations. But the thing which kind of works, I think, for Ten Hag is realizes what players can do and what they cannot do. For Mourinho, it's like, let's say Luke Shaw can do this. I want him to do this instead. Luke Shaw was very good going up front, right? But then he started kind of holding back Luke Shaw. And then he wasn't performing as well defensively. So then he started, you know, berating him in the press. So I feel when these kind of things started happening, again, it comes down to the same thing. Mourinho not getting the best out of what he has. While Ten Hag, without complaints, just does whatever he can with the strengths of the players he has at his mercy. And for good reasons, he has a couple of World Cup winners at his exposure, which I think is honestly serendipity, right? It just happens to be there. Nothing that you can fault him with. So that's where we are at.
So again, the common theme I'm hearing and
is Ten Hag getting the best out of what he has.
Ten Hag is doing, basically he's taking everybody with him. He's taking everybody forward with him and he's tapping into the strengths of his players. I think that's the theme we are hearing.
For sure.
There,
I think
right?
That's pretty much perfect man management, not just at the mentality and whatever's going off the field, but even off on the field, just recognizing the strengths, weaknesses and getting the maximum out of these players.
So are we yet to see Ten Hag the tactician?
Yep, I would still say we are very far from what Ten Hag really wants to achieve and the style of play that he's used to at Ajax and what he learned under, you know, Pep's tutelage at Bayern Munich, right? I'm pretty sure we're very far from there, but Ten Hag is practical. He knows what he has and he knows what he can do to get the best out of them until he has that skill and the tactical, you know, genius of certain players that he can bring into the club and then make it really his own.
I think we can cap it off by saying that, as you mentioned, Ten Hag is practical and Mourinho was also practical, but Mourinho's practicality was win or leave. Ten Hag's practicality is take everybody forward and build a sustainable foundation towards victory.
Perfectly said. I'd agree.
Given that right before the discussion began, right, even though you've convinced me that Ten Hag has done a way better job than what Mourinho did, given the resources he has, I think the original point of mine still stands, right? I think all the man management that Ten Hag has done, I think is hygiene. I think he has fixed problems which should not have existed at all at a club like Manchester United. The transfer problems should not have been there. The ownership problems should not have been there. The disjointed dressing room should not have been there. He has fixed all of those problems. And therefore, he's just done the basics right as of now, right? And as you're saying, we are yet to see the tactician. Given this is where we stand, do you think that he will lead Manchester United to glory next season? And this is where I'm coming from, right? We have 13 games remaining in the season. And where the league usually has ended over the past couple of years with the brilliance of City and Liverpool is you need to get into those mid-90s to win the league. We're talking about mid-90s. We're talking about probably winning 30 games a season. It's one thing to do all the hygiene and to get a cohesive dressing room and to just shore up your defense and play the games on the counter. It's one thing to get a player in his mid-30s and get one or two good seasons out of him in Casemiro. But can he really turn this team around next season and get those 90 points? And can he really do this in one preseason? Can he really turn this team around to playing the Ten Hag way and start winning the big trophies now?
I think to start with, I wouldn't say he has, we have not seen the technician side of him. We have definitely seen what he understands the game very well, especially with the kind of changes he brings in, the way he adapts to every game, right? So we have seen that tactical genius inside him, but we are not playing to what he wants to play in an ideal scenario where he can pick his players. And that's a good segue to what I think we'll achieve next season. I think we really have to do very well in the transfer market again. And we need support from the ownership, whoever will be our owners next season. And hence,
would you have as your owners? The Qataris?
That's a different podcast altogether. Let's not kind of get into that. But yeah, I think if we do have the support from whoever will be our owners next season, which I'm really doubtful about, just because it's still up in the air as to who will be our owners, right? Will the current owners be willing to spend so much when there's an eventual sale in the horizon, right? So I'm not really sure what will happen. So hence, I feel there are a lot of things which are not under Ten Hag's control. And when there are not a lot of things under Ten Hag's control, I feel that's where most of our weaknesses happen. When you give this man the authority to run the club as he likes it, right? I think we'll achieve a lot of great things. And I fear this may not happen next season. Hence, I would say I'll be pessimistic in my answer of saying we achieve glory next season. And by glory, I'd mean the Premier League.
Last question, right? And this is where we will wrap this podcast up. And at some later episode, you know, we'll discuss what Ten Hag needs to do, assuming that the ownership is in place and assuming he's getting all the support. But my last question to you is, or rather two questions I have. First question is, what, given how things are at United, what will be success according to you next season?
I think success next season would be to mount a proper title challenge, right? I wouldn't say maybe win the title, a proper title challenge, really pushing someone maybe to a 70, 80 points and seeing where that kind of gets us to, right? A proper
10 points within the title
10
leaders.
Points within the leaders, I would say. And then I would say a very good run in the Champions League. By a very good run, I'd say maybe a semi-final. And then, of course, adding to the Carabao Cup or an FA Cup, that'll be the sweetener. So I would say that would be a good next step if things are under Ten Hag's control.
Because the next season is far away, the ownership is far away. The next pressing game is the Real Betis game. Quick predictions on that before we wrap up this episode.
I think we'll probably get a 1-0 win against Real Betis. And I think that should be good enough to go into the second leg and then kind of cap it off. It'll be very professional. We played Real Betis, by the way, in a friendly and we lost to them, I think 1-0. But that was a friendly with some substandard players. And Real Betis have Nabil Fekir missing. Then that's their marquee player. So I think that's a big loss for them, a big win for us. So I think we'll get through.
I think I've grilled you enough today. There we have it from Himanshu, the most ardent Manchester United fan we know. 1-0 victory on a Thursday against Betis. And this 7-0 humiliating, embarrassing drubbing against Liverpool is just a one-off thing. And that Manchester United will bounce back. And that Erik ten Hag, in spite of the disaster over the weekend, is still the man to take this club forward. And take it forward in a way that 100%. Is different. 100% he's saying take it
way.
Forward. And taking it forward in a way that is different from Jose Mourinho.
So there it was. That was our first episode on Manchester United and whether this club will truly be back to becoming one of the greats in world football again. If you liked our episode, please share it and spread the word. And we'll be back this Sunday with another pint of football.